being peace. So we can continue this clarification of the Buddha's teaching. As we spoke of earlier, the Buddha's teaching is connected to this ongoing changing that is our life, and that he saw as a young man the reactions of greed and anger pushing and pull away and pulling towards as the cause of suffering, and sought to deal with this, liberate from the suffering, first by clarifying and studying with teachers of call meditations on spheres of formlessness or nothingness, mastering that, and then teacher of meditations on spheres of neither perception nor of neither perception nor not perception, and mastering that, and going further to the extremes of asceticism, call it denial, so as to deal with greed and anger pulling towards and pushing away that results in suffering. And yet, even after many years of asceticism, of denial, eating almost nothing, becoming extremely thin, and doing all sorts of other austerities, he found it did not resolve this matter of suffering, did not result in liberation. So, at some point he realized he would give up that path and return to his earliest practice. You could call it a natural meditation, which as a young man he engaged in spontaneously, it is said, while he was with his father at a agricultural festival, a form of, we can call it, experiential presence or awareness. This is what he then practiced, deepened, till the awakening that gave rise to him being called Buddha, the Awakened One. The awakening, or what you might call liberation from the suffering reactions that we have to this ongoing changing that is our life, as opposed to the habits of giving rise to holding or rejecting regarding objects and experiences, becoming perturbed by this body, mind, universe that's always going the way we want, the way we don't want, whether we call it right or wrong, good or bad. This is the being peace that we spoke of. This being peace that is who we are when we're not, don't cover it over with seeing or believing the judgments, the attachments and clinging stories of our life in terms of this good, bad, and all the other ways that we tend to do it. So we've spoken about the first Zen ancestor in terms of this, and the third Zen ancestor in terms of this, and touched on the sixth ancestor again. Different ways of articulating what this being peace practice is. This practice of not clinging, if we say it that way, or not attaching to our self-centered ways of seeing reality, but rather seeing it as it is in being this experiencing, in being this that we are. Or, as the sixth ancestor says, that sitting is not giving rise to or not holding to thoughts regarding objects and circumstances. That means inside or outside. And Zen is experiencing our nature without reacting to it, without being caught in the reactions about our nature. And our nature is this and that and all that we encounter, that is our very life. Even our nature, when it seems so-called not at peace or seems perturbed, Dogen Zenji clarifies this further for us as, in a way, an encouragement and as a way of reminding us who and what we are, because it is that that gives us the ability to cease holding to what seems natural, but which seems to generate suffering, which seems to generate not peace, agitation in our life. So I want to bring up several texts of Dogen to continue this. The first is portion of Bendoa, which can be translated, the title is Bendoa, and the translation in English is the unity or oneness of practice and attesting. The unity of both effort and attesting to what we are, or attesting is testifying in our very being what we are, testifying in our very manifesting who we are. And in he says, although this inconceivable Dharma or inconceivable reality is abundant in each person, abundant in each person, meaning whatever this Buddha liberation is, this being peace in the midst of ongoing changing is, it's abundant in each person. Notice he doesn't say it's abundant just in Buddhas or just in special, accomplished, abundant in each person. Yet, it's not manifested for us without training, or it doesn't emerge in the midst of our habits of reactiveness unless we make the necessary release of our reactive habits. And it's not attained, meaning it's not something that we taste and that emerges without this attesting. When you release it, when you release holding to it, it fills your hand. When you speak, it fills your mouth. It's not bound by any other categories. And yet we must personally confirm it for ourselves, because otherwise what we could call self-centered habits, as in the four practice principles, what we could call this greed, anger, and confusion, as in the Buddha's description of the three poisons, that overwhelms and blinds us. Blinds us to what we always are, blinds us to our very experiencing at the moment, because it becomes the screen through which we experience our life. All Buddhas continuously abide in it, continuously dwell in this state. All Buddhas continuously abide in it. Sentient beings, all beings, continuously move about in it. Continuously make use of it. But they are not fully awake to this situation. It isn't manifest in our consciousness. It isn't manifest for us, though we continuously move about in it. We continuously make use of it. See, this is very important, because again, it's turning us back to what you could call the natural meditation of experiencing, this very life. You want to use other words, you can call it awareness. You could call it mindfulness. You can call it all sorts of different things in English. It's this being exactly this moment that hears what I am saying. It's not something special or extra. And hearing it is not hearing it in a particular way. So if our hearing is so-called good or so-called bad, doesn't make a difference. As our conditions are, it is exactly this experiencing, hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting in the condition that we are, in the condition that changing circumstances manifests as our life. This is important for us both in terms of knowing what our practice is and knowing that our practice is always accessible to us exactly as we are this moment. It's not something special except that it seems special to us not to give in to our reactive habits of likes and dislikes, of wanting and not wanting, and all the other judging that perturbs us when it doesn't fit what we want. All the other ways that we hold on to thoughts and judgments about, call them objects or subjects, call them our body, call them someone else's body, call it the world, call it events. All of that is the only thing that blinds us to this life, this peace that we always are, that agitates our peace. And even when we're not at peace, experiencing just that is the opportunity of being peace, being at peace in the midst of circumstances, or choosing not to be at peace, choosing to follow along at what makes difficulties, and then of course suffering. So, as I said yesterday, with his very last words, with his very last sentences, the Buddha made very clear and encouraged all like things are ongoing changing. Strive diligently to be liberated, to let go of the greed, anger, and confusions that bind us in the midst of this ongoing changing life. The Buddha's life was a life of wandering around, not to give anyone any particular thing except as they came to him. And this is what he offered. This is what Dogen also starts his Fukan Zazengi with, the universal recommendations for Zazen, for experiencing, which is what Zazen is, upright sitting, being, experiencing. He says the way is originally perfect and all-pervading. To say it a little differently in English, fundamentally speaking, the way is perfectly pervasive. Pervasive means pervades everywhere. There's nowhere it's not manifesting and possible. How could it be contingent on practice and realization, practice and attesting? See, whether we see it, whether we make effort, whether we realize it, it's not dependent on that. Fundamentally, it's perfect and all-pervading. What need is there for special efforts, he says. Indeed, the whole body is free from dust. The whole of our being is free from anything which binds, creates suffering. It is never apart from this very place. What's the use of traveling around? Who could believe in a means to brush it clean? You only brush clean what you believe is a problem, but the very believing the problem is the problem, if I say it that way. And yet, and this is the and yet, as soon as there's a hair's breadth of deviation, meaning as soon as we hold on to our likes and dislikes, hold on to not at peace reactions, believe our self-centered attachment, naturally, that generates suffering, or then there's a gap between heaven and earth, is the language he uses. If the least likes and dislikes are held to, he uses the usual translation is arises, but means arises for us. Likes and dislikes are more of this ongoing changing, yet as soon as we believe them, then they become likes and dislikes, and they confuse us. Mind is lost, peace is lost. But it's only lost at this moment of arising confusion. See? There's nothing lacking. There's nothing that needs to be added. Even when he goes on to talk about formal instruction for sitting, what does he say? He starts by quoting a Chinese master who, in response to being asked, "What are you doing?" says, I am not thinking, or thinking not thinking. And then Dogen further clarifies, what is this thinking and not thinking? What kind of thinking is that? And he says, non-thinking, non-thinking, or non-caught in self-centered dream, non-holding to self-centered thoughts. Then even self-centered thoughts come and go in the midst of this peace that we are. And yet we, though experiencing isn't other than who we are all the time, we can't be other than experiencing. We could miss our very experiencing. We could somehow manage to miss our very experiencing. So let me end by quoting one last point from Dogen. Remember, this is all simply elaboration on the Buddha's fundamental teaching, which is the teaching of liberation from what creates suffering, stress, the teaching of what enables us to be the peace that we truly are. At the end of Genjo Koan, Dogen quotes a Chinese master, a Zen master, Baoqi, was fanning himself, and a disciple came up and said, "The nature of wind is constancy. There is no place it does not reach. Why do you still use a fan?" In a way, he's talking about what I just have been saying. This is what Dogen begins the Fukan Zazengi with. The way is originally perfect and all-pervading. How could it be contingent on practice and realization? How could it be contingent on using a fan? If this all-pervasive, all-pervading Baoqi answered his disciple, "You only know the nature of wind is constancy. You do not know yet the meaning of it reaching every place." The monk said, the disciple said, "What is the meaning of there is no place it does not reach?" Baoqi only fanned himself. The disciple bowed deeply. Dogen says, "The attesting of Buddha Dharma, the vital way, the vital way's right transmission is like this. To say one should not use a fan because wind is constant, that there will be a wind even when one does not use a fan, fails to understand constancy, fails to understand the nature of wind. It is because wind's nature is constancy, which is exactly talking about our nature. Our nature is experiencing. Our nature is this Buddha nature peace. Because of that, the wind of Dharma makes manifest the great earth's goldenness and ripens the sweet cream of the long river." So I've spoken enough these past few days on this matter, and if you have something you want to bring up, I'll stop now and maybe we can speak further of this in response to your comments. If you wish, you can change your positions. Since I've been speaking about this last week and throughout Sashin, I'm sure some of you will have useful and supportive comments.
You started your talk yesterday by saying you're going to speak about the kernel, I think that was the word, the kernel of the Buddha's teaching, which is suffering and the end of suffering.
Yes.
Or something like that.
Yes.
Okay. That was my memory. From time to time, I'm asked, somebody will ask me, what is Buddhism? Or sometimes it's like, what do Buddhists believe? Or there could be variations of that. And I find that it's a really good that's a really good test of my understanding of my clarity in the moment, answering that question.
Mm-hmm.
Really good exercise.
Good.
I have to say, quite often, when I feel almost at a loss to say something. Maybe it's because I'm trying to respond to their question as opposed to maybe reframing the question, which I could reframe it as, well, I don't know that much about Buddhism, but I know something about the Buddhist teachings. I know something about practice. And I can speak about that with some clarity.
Yeah. Good. Speak up from your own experience. Because that's exactly where the teaching is expressed. It's expressed by your sharing your genuine experiencing in the moment, in your genuine experiencing of being present. See? There's nothing extra you need to do to be present. It's just a matter of not holding on to our likes and dislikes and judgments that are blinding us at this moment from responding to whoever's there. Responding to whatever's arising right now. Responding as whatever's arising right now. In the four practice principles and generalities, we say it all the time. Being just this moment is the compassionate response. Formulas and concepts one can get from lots of books, but they do little good when we're in the midst of suffering. Because we believe our story of judgment, either greed or anger or our confusion and the reactive habit and the suffering pain, if I say it, of that. And we resist or refuse to be right where we are in the body-mind, if I say it that way, in the body-mind universe of experiencing this without holding to the likes or the dislikes and the reactions to that. Even to, I'm confused about Buddhism too, but here is what I do. Unfortunately, when we speak to others, we often ask for things that are going to reinforce and perpetuate our previous stories, preconceptions, misconceptions, and prejudices. So we don't be with them as they and we are at this moment together. So we lose the peace of the present moment experiencing, or the present moment sharing, if we could say that. Peace isn't inside me as opposed to outside there or with someone else. It's being this moment. That's why we say that's compassion. Compassion is being, joining, manifesting together the universe with this person right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, what I noticed specifically in some of those instances is that, yes, the person asking the question may just be in a way confirming their own misunderstandings. For mm-hmm. instance, sometimes people ask me, do Buddhists believe in God or something like that? And I notice that I get thrown by that, because then if I just then take a moment and maybe, again, say, reframe the question in a way that I feel I can mm-hmm. answer, that it's not not dealing with these kind of things like God or incarnate or reincarnation or all that stuff. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just, I know a little bit about practice.
Good. And we all know very well, within not knowing in terms of things you could recite in your head or figure out, but knowing in our very being, which is what I've been, that's why I've gone from one to another in these past few days, to show they're all saying, you know this very well. It's not lacking. It's all pervasive. It's who you are. It's not something you are going to get. Yeah, and Tony.
Seeing my reactions and working with those over the years, something that you clarified today was it's not special to let go of your reactions. I never got that till right now, and I've let go of a lot of them. I still have plenty more, but it really turned me around that feeling that I get when I drop the salt jar and it breaks and salt goes all over the floor and I don't have a reaction to it, there's always a way I want to just kind of pat myself on the back, like, yeah, that's good, look at you. You know, I see what you did. You know, you just let that go. But really, the clarification came when I realized, actually, I'm just sitting on that foundational piece in that moment.
Yes.
That it's not special at all.
Yeah.
But in a way, it is. It's transformative, not only for my life, but for the ripples of life around me, too.
And the reactions arise when we drop it and we go, oh, shit! Mm-hmm. Or whatever else we do. Because that occurring is just occurring. That's just a reactive habit. And yet, if we don't buy into that when that occurs, when that erupts, then right there is not buying into or holding on to the reactive habit, just habits, if I use that as a verb. Reactive habits, habit. And yet, if we don't perpetuate it, extend it, at some point or other, doesn't matter if it's the first millisecond or after the first hour of going on and on about it, that's exactly what the sixth ancestor is getting at when he says, not seeing circumstances in terms of right or wrong, good or bad, shortcoming, should have, shouldn't have, which is what we do. Because as soon as we see ourself, our circumstances, other people in those terms, then you get greed, anger, and confusion. And the problem with greed, anger, and confusion is not the greed, but the suffering. It is the greed, but it's the suffering and harming. Suffering for ourselves, so to speak, suffering of others, harming ourselves, harming others. Others are all the beings and the whole universe we encounter that is our life moment by moment.
Yeah. You mentioned denial in connection with asceticism, and as if that was an early path of the Buddha.
Yeah.
What connection is there between denial and asceticism?
Well, what the Buddha, and actually he had some companions who practiced this with him together, and there's discussion of it in the sutras, but they thought that And this was a common enough practice that the more you deny the body, the more you'll eventually come to liberation or something. So you eat very little. It's said that he came down to the point when he ate the equivalent of a grain of rice a day, and he was so thin and his stomach was so caved in that you could see his backbone in his stomach. I mean, they have actually Buddha images like that. And, you know, some would stand and never lay down and sleep for years and years. And some would do things like stare up into the sun. All sorts of traditions like that. And this, humans have done this for centuries in all traditions. It's not particularly, this was, you know, in Hindu or Indian tradition, but, I mean, we have it in Western traditions of fasting from one end of the week to the other, of wearing hair shirts, of staying on top of a post and never moving for years, or other things like that. I don't need to go at length into those. And we have it in our culture as well. We go in one direction or another.
So the denial is just the denial of the light.
Denial of all sorts of aspects of living. This is why the Buddha's teaching is called the middle way. It's the middle in terms of saying that in order to be at peace, you don't have to go to the extreme of denial, nor do you have to go to the extreme of self-indulgence. Because that's where it starts off. Oh yeah, the way I'm going to be peaceful and is if I get everything I want. I indulge all my senses and all my wants. Consumerism run rampant. If I could use that kind of expression. Or violence run rampant, or whatever. And the other side is denying myself. Thank you. See, peace is who we are, being at peace in the midst. But being at peace doesn't mean doing nothing. It means it is responding to circumstances and manifesting the peace we are. And even manifesting the not peace and doing what's skillful with that. Because we're all subject to this ongoing changing, which includes reactive habits of all sorts arising. Even arising when we thought, oh, I'm done with that, I've taken care of that. Look at how many years I've taken care of that. And then all of a sudden, there we find ourselves caught up in reacting to someone saying, someone doing, me feeling, my body falling apart, or whatever. Well, I've spoken more than enough, and if you all have nothing to say, I thank you for your practice, and please continue being this moment, being this experiencing in your zazening, in your sitting, walking, and all your life and all your encounter with all that you meet, because you only meet your own peace in every encounter. And your own peace is the peace of everyone you are with. It's neither yours nor theirs, but it's what you share. Thank you.